Could we be more cliched with our introductory music to Olympic gold medalist Russell Mark?
Hey, I'm impressed, Kev. I am really impressed. That's the first musical intro I've received in a very, very long time. Great to be here, Kev. Thanks for the invite.
How are you?
Yeah, good. Good. Had a good break up the Gold Coast. Took the family up there and, I've enjoyed it. It's good to be back in Melbourne, though.
So what is 2017? What's in store for the Mark family, yourself and Lauren? What are you up to?
Well, Lauren's... I can speak about this a little bit, but I can't give you the results. Lauren...
Is this the ninja?
Yes. She's just appeared in Australian Ninja.
Right.
I'm not sure when Channel 9 are actually...
I don't think anyone is.
I haven't been told. Obviously, there's some confidentiality clauses there.
Phone's probably going off in the room outside now. People going, tell him to shut up about her, Ninja.
Yeah, no, I can't say too much more, except she's in it. She made it through to the TV rounds of that. So that's what...
As a contestant...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, she's fit. She's very fit.
I know
at the
that.
Moment, so.
Everyone knows that.
That was interesting because that was filmed in December up in the middle of Sydney Harbour, Cockatoo Island. It was filmed, and that's no secret because every night that we were there, there was just a ring of boats that would pull up and watch it from their boat.
Do they have a studio audience as well?
Yeah, oh yeah, okay. Big audience.
Is this the thing Freddie Flintoff's doing?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, Freddie was one of the hosts there. And the young lady off the footy show.
Rebecca Madden.
Rebecca Madden was the main host. So Lauren competed in that, which was interesting.
Okay.
And when that's filmed, I guess you'll see a lot more of it. So that she's already signed up for next year, though. She's put her hand up again, or this year now,
okay.
Of course. So that depends on, I guess, how the show rates.
So is the shooting finished for Lauren now?
I think so. I can't see her getting back into it. I think when Lauren became a mother, it was very difficult for her to juggle the two things. And the two kids that are at an age now, we've got nearly a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old. And Indy, my young boy, sadly gave me the news 2 weeks ago. He walked into the lounge and he was sort of teary-eyed to tell me that he's not going to play for Hoppers Crossing Footy Club this year. He's joined the Werribee Soccer Club.
There you go.
So we've lost another one.
I lost my boy as well.
Yeah, he joined an indoor soccer league, which I see
exactly
your young boy.
My boy did,
yeah,
yep.
He's playing down there at Werribee and he loves it. So... I don't know if you'll go back to football, but not many do at that age.
No, I'm absolutely positive mine never will.
Yeah, and it was I loved going to watch the Hoppers Crossing Juniors play, but
yep.
He just loves soccer, and he's got a group of friends, and they formed his own team, and now they've crossed over, and now they'll be playing outdoor soccer this winter, he tells me. So,
And I'm sure there's other parents who can relate to that. To let us know, 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116 off the SMS. Have you lost your boy or girl to a different code?
Yeah, look.
Is he still barring for Carlton?
Yes, he's still a Carlton, so he's on the waiting list at the G, but if he gives up his Carlton membership, I'll be ripping that up pretty quick, smart. I can tell you, spending $500 or $600 a year just to have the tickets, not much fun. But
no.
I always just thought I'd go to the footy with him when he was 18 and enjoy, and he still might. But he's going to the Victory game tomorrow night. He's going to watch Victory in Brisbane.
Yeah, see, my boy's besotted with Victory.
Yeah.
We go to Victory games whenever we can.
Yeah, well, Indy will be there tomorrow night. And he's a big Arsenal fan, gets up in the mornings and watches them play it at 6 o'clock in the morning. So he's addicted.
Yeah. Oh, mine's besotted, but he's not, he hasn't got into the EPL yet. Hasn't really clicked with that. It's all A-League at the moment.
Yeah, look,
which is good, which is terrific that we've got a national competition that we're happy for our children to follow and be involved with, and it's all good. There was a time 20 years ago, when you wouldn't have been happy about that.
You would have been brave to take your kids to a South Melbourne Hellas game.
Yeah, no, you would have. And look, you see page 3 today in the Herald Sun. Feral soccer fans flare out. Peter Rolfe's written a story about the fact that how the behaviour is so much better this year.
Yeah, which is encouraging you to take your children
Correct.
To the games.
Yep.
And they've done a great thing, and the A-League will continue to prosper because of that.
Yep.
Let's hope, anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, what are you doing 2017?
Look,
apart from working on your tan, obviously.
After 30 years with Beretta, it actually ended on December the 31st, so I'm no longer involved in the shooting industry.
And now we mean that's the people who make the guns,
not
the bloke who hosts the Channel 7 show.
No,
Mark
not
Beretta.
Mark Beretta. Mark Beretta, though, funnily enough, a few years back, he actually had a trip to Italy, and I got him inside the Beretta factory.
You?
Because there are no surviving Berettas left in the world. The Beretta name discontinued right. about 10 years ago. But when Mark Beretta fronted up there, they treated him like God. No, Beretta, the gun manufacturer, I've been an ambassador for them or competing for them for 30 years, yeah. which has ended on December 31st last year now. So I'm a free agent to wow. do whatever I like in the... But look, I won't be.
Would you continue just shooting, you know, at your local gun club and stuff?
Maybe. I mean, I'll probably do the commentary role again for Channel 7 up at the Commonwealth Games. But as far as being involved in the sport at any international level, that would be.
What about just at yeah. a local level, just shooting, just have? I mean, is it? Are you capable now of going back and just doing it for fun, or is that part? Is that
no,
past?
No, I find it hard. It's even though I'm. It will largely depend on my little boy if he takes it up yeah. when he's 12, and then I might go back and compete locally. We've got a very good club at Werribee, which I sometimes go and have a shot in every now and then. I'll front it up at their Christmas competition and had a blaze away. And yeah, I shoot pretty well at that level of competition, but as you would expect, I would. But as you get older, you need to keep in a bit of practice, which yeah. I don't plan on doing. And no, look, it's one of those
sports.
Because
that became like your job, didn't it?
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's the same with cricketers. When you finish a cricketing career, you don't often see cricketers going back and playing club cricket.
No.
Even though they could.
You might see them go and have a kick of the footy, or you'll see yeah. a Daniel Harford go and have a play cricket in a competition rather than go and have a kick at local footy.
Yeah, but it's hard to play in the Super League for a lot of these yeah, football, and yeah. it's pretty hard for me to go back and enjoy a local competition, even though I'm lucky it's a sport that I can do that.
Yeah.
And there is a Veterans League internationally that starts at 55, so I'm 53 next month, so, you know, maybe in a couple of years, you never know, but okay. I doubt it.
So what are you going to be doing in 2017? I know you've got some business interests.
Yeah, look, obviously I'm an owner at the Hotel 520 up in Hoppers Crossing, and a director and an owner of the Tigers Clubhouse as well, which has got a very big tie of the Werribee Footy Club still. I'd like yep. to think I'll get to a few more games this year.
Still number one ticket holder at the Werribee
with
Footy
Merv,
Club.
With yep. Merv Hughes, yeah, I'd like to do that. I'd like to see Carlton win a few games in 2017.
It's going to be a long year for you then. Yeah. No, they'll win. They'll be all right.
I'm not sure. I'd like to get to the footy. I do love going to the football. It sounds like I'll be going to the soccer a bit, though, which I don't know how that'll go. Look, your team, and I know you've spoken enough and you probably get criticised a lot about bringing up the Bulldogs, but if Carlton could play with half the intensity this year that the Bulldogs showed in September last year, yeah. we'll win a few games.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Carlton will be all right. I don't think you'll make the eight.
No, I can't see that we've got a list
you
yet.
You might give it a shake.
We'd have to give it a bigger shake than we've given it yeah. the last 2 years. But look, Lauren's business, Go Shooting, is still running a lot of corporate events, still running a heap of bucks parties, and I still help out in that. And that will probably see me through the year. I mean, that still gets us all over Australia to run shooting competitions. Yep. But it's on the other
side. What about coaching? Because you've famously coached, you know, Prince Kevin in and was, and I'm not making that up, but the prince's name was Kevin.
Well, there was three princes over yeah. there, but... Prince Jeff, it was.
I knew it was a common name of a nice sounding
Joffrey,
bloke.
But everyone called him Prince Jeff. Look, yeah, I still do a bit of coaching around the place, yep. and I will do that, continue to do that. And I guess that pays a few bills as well. And
yep.
You always need to do a few things to keep you involved.
Are
in
you looking for something to challenge you? Is that what where you're at the minute or not?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I always said I'd play golf when my shooting career was over, and I would love to play golf. It's just the time constraint yeah. that a game of golf takes, and it's the biggest drawback for that sport.
It is.
Because you need to sacrifice 5 or 6 hours of your day to play a round of golf. Well, it's hard with business interests to give up 6 hours a day for your sport.
Yep.
When I was training for shooting, Kevin, I'd go to the shooting range for 90 minutes or 2 hours and my training would be done. So golf would be three times longer than that. And, you know, if they ever come up with a shortened version of a golf game like they have for 2020 cricket, golf will take off.
Yep.
But the purists won't allow that to happen, unfortunately.
And it's part of the charm of the game is that yeah, you do get your buggy and walk out
yeah,
and walk around
it
and
ruins
chat with
a
your
great
mates
walk.
And all that. Yeah, it does.
But if there was a shortened version, I'm sure a lot more people like me would take it up.
Yeah. Off the SMS, don't panic. My son left football for a year, went to soccer, got it out of his system, back to AFL, prefers to play footy over soccer, but loves to go to watch City play. Okay. After doing AFL development on the peninsula for over 20 years, soccer has overtaken footy. More kids play soccer than footy and cricket together. Funny thing is the AFL say growth is stronger than ever. Head in the sand stuff. And guess who's now about to start coaching soccer? Very disillusioned with the AFL off the SMS.
But do these kids, when they're 17 or 18, continue to play soccer, or do they give up the sport? I don't know. That's a stat I keep hearing.
But that's a new one. For me, that's a new stat, because the A-League's only 11 years old this year, 11 or 12 years old this year. A 6 or 7 year old getting into the A-League 12 years ago is now 17. You have to ask them now, sure. I reckon, whether they're still in the game. Whether our sons, who are a similar age, whether in 5 years' time, when they hit that sort of 16, 17, 18 mark, whether they're still playing the game, whether they become going to become spectators, and whether they become dual spectators, which allows you to watch both, I'm not sure. I still reckon that's developing.
Yeah, look, with soccer, you've got 11 kids on the pitch. With football, you've got 18. I know with a couple of subs. And it's always been my grievance with basketball. You've only got a group of 5 kids playing, and unless you're a giant, your future in the sport is pretty limited. You can't really go too far. Where soccer is of an interest to myself and my son was, he's not a very big kid, but yep. He can run all day. And in AFL, he was getting challenged because he was small. But in soccer, because he continues to run and run and run, he actually finds himself. And I think that's the great part about soccer.
And it's rocket science here. It's easier. The ball's easier to kick. It's much easier to play anywhere. I mean, I was having a kick this morning, 10 o'clock on McLean Reserve at Spotswood. My little bloke, we're on the footy oval, but we're having a kick at the soccer ball. You can take it anywhere.
There'd be some people challenge you to say it's easier, though, than AFL.
It's easier to have a whack at.
Yeah, okay.
The ball doesn't do as many different permutations of the ball. There isn't as much. You're basically just, like we were doing today with my son, we just run around having a kick. So we're just kicking. When you've got to kick a footy, it bounces a different way. You've got to hold it a different way to be able to kick it properly. Whereas with the soccer ball, you can just get out there and go whack.
The one common denominator I'm hearing from so many parents about why they like soccer is the rules are so easy, whereas
Correct.
AFL, the rules are very, very complicated.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You try taking someone to an AFL game that's never been before, someone that flies in from the United States, take them to an AFL game and then try and explain what's going on out there. Good luck.
Yep.
Hard work.
No idea. Absolutely not. I've sat with people who've come to Bulldogs functions and they're from England or wherever, and they go, so hang on, so why do you do that? When you try to explain, that's when you realise how difficult that game is to explain to someone else.
Because we grow up with it, we evolve with it, and the little rule changes you absorb. But for someone for the first time, AFL's difficult. And soccer, I think someone said it's only got 17 rules. It's very easy if you can come on with the offside rule is the only one that gets a little bit grey at times, but the rest of it's pretty easy.
Let's talk to Paul in Ballarat. He's given us a buzz on 9429 1116. Text thoughts, and we've got plenty of those to get through. 0433 98 1116. Olympic gold medalist Russell Mark is in the studio with me till 2 o'clock. Paul, g'day.
G'day. Hi, boys. How are you going?
Good, thanks.
I was just listening with interest to your comments about the sons and the boys playing soccer and football.
Yeah.
I just had a recent experience. The 12-year-old son and his mates, who are predominantly the best athletes of their age in the region and gun footballers, decided to put together a soccer team over summer and had never really played soccer before, and they creamed the soccer players, and the soccer players got really upset.
Okay.
It's great that they've been able to put their team together, but you're telling me, Paul, these guys had no soccer experience?
No, apart from kicking the ball around in the playground, I guess.
What'd they do? Just go out and muscle them?
Yeah, pretty much.
Basically, this soccer with intimidation factor 10 or something?
Yeah, a little bit like that. And the parents weren't at all happy from the other teams.
Well, it's supposed to be a minimal contact game. Was it indoor or outdoor?
It was outdoor, but the moral of the story is that the numbers are dropping off at football.
Yep.
And the weaker kids, or the not as strong and aggressive kids, are dropping off and playing soccer.
Yeah, it's far easier to just be making up the numbers in an AFL team at that junior level.
Sure.
Far easier. Thanks, Paul, for your call.
Good call.
Alan's in Carnegie. G'day, Alan.
Yeah, g'day, Russell. I'm in the Tarneit area, which you know is right next to Hoppers and Werribee.
Yep.
I've got a boy that played for Tarneit Football Club when he turned 7, and that lasted one season, and he moved to Hoppers Crossing Soccer and loves it ever since. It's in the football, the ground is big. These are 7-year-old boys. He plays a full back. Sometimes you don't get a touch for a whole game because the size of the ground.
Yeah.
Doesn't get involved as much, and the tackling is not his art, but a lot of boys just don't like to tackle. So he's moved to soccer, and now, you know, they've got a cap at Hoppers Crossing Soccer Club that can only take so many players.
Okay. The soccer club's got a cap?
Yeah, because, for instance, last year, under-9s, there are 3 teams in under-9s.
Okay.
I think actually there's more, and they just got inundated with players and had to put a cap on it.
Okay.
Good problem to have is having to put a cap on, and I know it's a big problem in that area of Melbourne, the amount of sporting facilities the council have to keep opening up.
Yep.
So, you know, there's only so much money to go around, and what do? You just can't open up a soccer or football ground every year in a new area.
Well, they just about are.
They have to.
But the one's not enough. They need about 5 at a time because of Williams Landing and Tarneit and Wyndham Vale and all the estates down there.
Well, don't get me started on getting the infrastructure to those. Grounds, Kevin. We haven't got enough time. I'm only here for 2.
25 past 12. Now, just in as we head to the break, the Australian one-day squad for tomorrow's game has been announced. This is the, how many we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This is the 11, all right? So this is the team. It is Warner, Head, Smith, Lynn, Mitch Marsh, Maxwell, Wade, Faulkner, Cummins, Stark, and Stan Lake. The big boy's got the Guernsey, so he'll make his debut on his home turf at the Gabba tomorrow against Pakistan in the first of the one-day international. So it's Warner, Head, Smith, Lynn, Marsh, Maxwell, Wade, Faulkner, Cummins, Stark, and Stan Lake. Russell Marcus in the studio with me, Olympic gold medalist. Now, I'm going to talk to a very interesting lady who I believe is about to head off to a World Cup in Delhi. Is that right?
Correct. New Delhi, of all places, is the season opener for the World Cup series in shooting for 2017.
A sports shooter and Olympian from Rio, Leticia Scanlon's on the line. Hi, Leticia.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
It's good to hear your voice.
Lovely to hear yours as well, Russell.
Now, tell us about life after Rio. I mean, I did the commentary in Rio, and this is probably the first chance I've had to really sit down and talk with you about this, and it's sad that we're doing that in front of all of Melbourne, isn't it, instead of face-to-face.
Go right ahead. It's all right.
Sorry, Kev.
Yeah, we're fine.
But I was curious. Kevin, I was just explaining to Kevin how the rules of our sport changed in Rio. For the first time ever, when you made the Olympic final, you didn't get to carry over your score into the final, and Leticia, Kevin, was the highest qualifier in the Olympic final in Rio. But sadly for Leticia, when the final started, she had to go back to 0.
So she was no better off than the person who finished 5th, 6th or 7th or 8th.
No, I mean, and I guess luckily for Australia, Leticia's teammate, Catherine Skinner, who barely qualified for the final, she went into a sudden death shoot-off and knocked out a girl from Canada and got the last place in the final.
Okay.
She then went into the final on the same score as Leticia and shot a very good semi-final and went on to win a gold medal. But I guess, Leticia, the time to really ask you is now, what do you think about those rules? The rules were put in place for people like me that did the TV commentary, and it made it very exciting. But as a competitor, how have the competitors actually coped with that rule change?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult coming to terms with that at the beginning. But at the end of the day, I really couldn't change what, you know, the head honchos had decided, you know, the rules to be. So I really did just accept it. And probably when I made the final in the top qualifier, I didn't think that it was a bad thing. I thought, well, I've gone in with some good form, so surely I'll be able to produce that, you know, in the semi-final. And obviously that didn't occur. And, you know,
I guess at the start of the day, Leticia, your goal would have been, first of all, to make the final, but more importantly, to try and make it as the top qualifier, because that meant you were in the best form. So I suppose that was a positive thing.
Definitely, yeah, it was positive. And, you know, at the end of the day, Australia still got a gold medal, and I'm extremely happy that Catherine was the one to do it if it wasn't for me. So I just, you know, want to put shooting on the map as a sport more in Australia and, yeah, just get some more publicity and positive publicity for it.
Letitia, were you asked, because this change was made for the Rio Olympics, were you asked after the Olympics how all the competitors felt about it and whether you thought that it was a fair system?
No. You know what? I didn't really discuss Rio with anyone after it. I just sat in my room and cried for the next 3 months.
Sorry for laughing, but that's, we probably shouldn't be. So that will be the system forever and a day now, without any consultation with the actual competitors, which I find, Russell, a bit strange.
Look, shooting's a sport that's always threatened by the fact that it's not politically correct in everybody's eyes, and it's trying to save itself on television, because to have an Olympic final of any sport on television during the games requires it to be exciting.
Yeah.
And to have it there, it's eating in a lot of money to have it there. So they had to bring in something that kept you glued to the TV. Now, when I won my Olympics in 96, I went in as top qualifier also. But midway through the final, I was probably 6 or 7 ahead of the next competitor.
Yep.
So it was terrible television. Nobody knew that it would go to the last shot and it would be decided. It was terrible. And people, I guess, don't want to watch that, but they wanted to watch what Letitia was in, because they were all on zero and it was head-to-head, and they even made it harder for Letitia this time around, because in qualifying they're allowed at 2 shots at the target. In the semi-finals and the finals for the medals, they only let them have 1 shot at the target. So that really makes it difficult.
How can you change the sport halfway through?
Well, mate, Letitia.
Sorry. Sorry, Letitia, did that factor into, you know... How did that factor in for you?
No, that single barrel final has been the rules ever since I've started shooting. So, you know, I've been shooting that for 11 years. So I knew what, that process was about. But, yeah, not powering through your qualification was a little bit different. But, again, they've changed it for next year. So we've got new rules for next year. So, yeah, they just like to change it all the time.
Letitia, onwards and upwards, you're about to depart for the national championships are next week in Perth, and straight after that you're off to New Delhi. What's after that? What does the rest of the World Cup circuit for this year hold? I know the world titles are in Moscow later in the year, and Australia will have, Kevin, the number one ranked team in women's trap. Undoubtedly, on paper, Australia will start as favourite there with Letitia, Catherine Skinner, and we've got a young lady called Emma Cox from up Shepparton Way that won a leg of the World Cup last year, forming what I believe will be the team. And they're all world top 10 competitors. But what's this year involved, Letitia?
Yeah, it's more starting again, Russ. You know, I've planned for the last 4 years, you know, to reach Rio, and now 2017 is just starting again and setting my goals. And I think I just want to be really competitive this year on the international circuit and, you know, remind everyone that I'm not going there, not going away, and I'll be there for, you know, another 4 years. So just trying to make some finals, hopefully a few medals for Shooting Australia, and yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, you've won a couple of World Cup gold medals already, and I think probably a couple of silver medals. You were the gold medalist at the last Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, and I thought the funniest thing that I'd seen in the media after that was a story on you looking for a boyfriend. How's that gone since?
Oh, it's been a hard road to find a boyfriend, but I did it. I've got one.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. We won't go into that, but I'm glad that's worked for you. There's nothing like winning a Commonwealth Games gold medal to get some advertising out there.
Obviously it hasn't done any harm. Hey, Letitia, how'd you get into shooting?
My dad's a shooter, so it was a really good bonding thing between myself and him on the weekends. And then I retired him quite early when I started beating him. So.
Right. Is that generally how most people get into shooting? Is it a family kind of thing that happens?
Yeah, you don't see too many people just decide to take up shooting just, with no family influence. You know, all these people these days, either their dads or their mums or brothers or sisters shoot. But hopefully Catherine winning that gold medal does influence some, women to come out and have a go, because it's a fantastic sport, and, you know, you can take it to the Olympics and travel all around the world. So, you know, it only brings positive things to it.
Tish, you must be very proud of the strength of the Australian women's trap team at the moment. But the question I guess I've got is, why are the women so good? Why are the women better than this sport than the men at the moment?
Probably because, you know, we started 10 years ago. Catherine and I started exactly the same time and we always pushed each other. And when you have two quite competitive people, that just only pushes other competitors as well. So women's scrap at the moment is so incredibly strong and it's only going to get stronger just because, you know, people want to beat us and, you know, it gives you that more motivation. And the up-and-coming women at the moment will be superstars in the next 4 to 5 years.
Are you doing this full-time, Letitia?
Yes, I am.
How are you able to do it full-time as a shooter? Because I wouldn't imagine it's the sort of sport where, you know, like a high-profile swimmer or that you would get to... do you get to funding and where do you get that from?
Well, I do work for Russell and he pays me about $200,000 a year. That really does help me. No, I live with my parents at the moment. It's a very... very difficult sport to get funding out of, and I'm just really lucky that I've got the support of my parents. And, you know, I'll probably only do this for another 4 years and then have to really be a functional member of society and get a real job.
Now, I've been a bit of a critic of the winning edge policy, but I guess you're an example of where the winning edge policy has worked. They've picked you out to put in a squad, and absolutely rightly so. But I guess the winning edge program funded by the Australian Sports Commission has been able to target, cliched obviously, yeah, but it targets people like yourself that to stop you going to get another job which would take you out of the sport. So I guess that's the positive of the Winning Edge program.
Well, that's exactly right. Without the Winning Edge, I wouldn't have been able to do this. Russ, you know that I was joining the police force and got accepted and things like that, and Shooting Australia said to me, look, you know, we've got this new policy coming in which will enable a little bit of funding. You know, would you hold your career just to pursue, you know, your dreams and things like that? So unfortunately I cannot say anything bad about the policy because it really has worked in my favour.
Do you still plan on joining the police force?
No, I'm over that phase now.
There'd be a lot of criminals very happy to hear that, I reckon.
Wait, she can shoot how well? No, forget it. I'm not going down there. Hey, Letitia, thanks for joining us. Good luck the national championships in Perth and then off to New Delhi for the World Cup. We wish you the best.
Thanks, guys. Stay out of trouble, yeah?
She wasn't talking to me then, incidentally. She was talking completely and utterly to Russell Mark, Olympic gold medalist who's in the studio with me. The three players who are missing the one-day international squad we announced earlier are Khawaja, Zampa and Hazelwood. They're the ones that have been left out. And I want to talk to you about that winning edge concept, and I also want to get to some of the SMSs about soccer versus AFL. We'll get to those after this. I will come. 14-1 here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's Home of Sport. Kevin Hillier here with Russell Mark in the studio on this hour for Subway, the new Angus beef patty sub from Subway. Limited time only at participating Subway restaurants. Talking about winning edge, before we get to that, soccer's easier on the body. This is off the SMS from JR and Ashwood. AFL's harder. The skill sets between the two are a different matter altogether. I play AFL but only go to watch A-League games. That's interesting.
Yeah, that is an interesting comment.
My boys left Auskick for soccer and had fun for years, but now both avid Tigers supporters going to games as well and enjoying Melbourne City as well as that. Soccer's been the highest participation sport for boys and girls under 14 in Canada for 2 decades now. There's no war on AFL. It's just hype. Oh, I think there's a big... That'll get worse as it goes along. Here's an interesting fact. I used to be a firearms instructor at Queensland Police Academy. Lou Faringio was a promotions officer for Glock Firearms. He came out the academy and I was lucky enough to meet him.
He was the Hulk, wasn't he?
Is that Lou Ferrigno?
I think so, yeah.
The way it's spelled here, it's Faringino. The Hulk, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's who that is.
So Glock Firearms, a...
pistol.
They...
Yeah, they're sort of a
competition
military
for Beretta type thing.
Oh, Glock fire. Glock make a pistol that all of the armed
I've
forces
yeah
and security people use.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So that's off the SMS. Your thoughts at any time on 0433981160. Now, tell me about Winning Edge, because you mentioned Letitia's a good example of where it works, but is it a program set up purely and simply to win medals?
Look, I've been a harsh critic of it.
Yeah, I know.
And I've been involved on the Olympic Committee, I guess, for 16 years as either an athlete's representative or on the board there for quite some time. And when they introduced Winning Edge, I thought this will be a disaster because it doesn't do anything to promote grassroots level sport. Winning Edge is a policy designed by the Sports Commission to pick selected athletes out and fund them. And Letitia Scanlon is a great example of how it's worked, because Letitia Scanlon would have joined the police force because she needed to get an income to keep competing. So yep. Winning Edge picks people out and gives them the money instead of the money going into the pool.
And they said, can you put your career on hold and come
Correct.
And do this?
Yeah. So Letitia Scanlon, even though she didn't win a medal at the Olympic Games, she went close, she made the final, and potentially is a medal prospect for Tokyo. But where Winning Edge lets itself down is the sport as a whole, and if you continue to use shootings as an example, there's no pathway into the team anymore, because the team is subjectively picked by a coach and a high performance manager. Whereas the previous policies had a very clear pathway. You went to the national championships, you either finished first, second or third, and you were in the team. Now, the same people would make the team if that was still the policy, but they can't risk that. They can't risk a person that they've spent all this money on getting sick on the week of the Nationals and then not making the team. And that's where you saw the debacle leading into the Rio Olympics. A young guy called Mitchell Iles appealed his place for his non-selection against Adam Vella and Michael Diamond because Mitch Iles is ranked number one, but didn't get selected because he wasn't part of the Winning Edge program.
Well, why wasn't he part of the Winning
Edge? Well, he should have been, but he's only a young kid. He was only 16 or 17 years old when the Winning Edge program started. He wasn't on the scene,
but he
progressed so quickly, overtook everybody. But because he hadn't had any money spent on him, they weren't going to send him to the Olympic Games because they make themselves look stupid. He took it to the Court of Arbitration of Sport and won. But then, of course, Michael Diamond got himself kicked out of the team anyway through a few misdemeanors. So Mitchell Iles went to the Olympics anyway, but he wouldn't have gone if Michael Diamond hadn't have had that charge against him.
So where the Sports Commission is obviously working for whom?
I said the Winning Edge policy is a policy designed by administrators for administrators, and it's no different than what's going on in the federal parliament at the moment with Susan Ley. There are so many people with their snouts at the trough on the Winning Edge program that shouldn't have their snout in the trough. You've got so many high performance managers, specialised coaches, all the administration side of it.
But Billy Smith, who goes to the Roval Gun Club and starts shooting and shows potential, where's he been spotted? Where's the pathway and talent development for him?
You're talking intelligently here. That's the problem.
Sorry, but isn't that where we should be focusing? Isn't that where the next Olympic gold medalist comes from?
It is, and he should be given a chance to go to the national championships and prove that he can do it there under pressure. But the Winning Edge policy does not allow him to do that, and it's not just in shooting, Kevin. There are many sports.
That's what I mean. It's obviously
the problem. But if you concentrate on shooting, there were 23 people competed in events at the Rio Olympics. 19 of the 23 finished in the bottom two-thirds of the field. It was a disaster for the shooting team, but we had a shining light in Catherine Skinner win a gold medal. So these administrators hide behind that gold medal and they don't want to talk about the other performances. And that's the problem. No one's justifying how this works. They're looking after their own jobs, and it's the same in federal politics, the same with Susan Ley. It's exactly what's happened with her at the moment. They are more concerned about looking after themselves than the people that they're put there to look after. And that's what I struggle with. And John Coates from the Olympic Committee has exactly the same views on it. He's been very public about it because he's worried what's going to happen after Tokyo, because if Rio was a bad result, the pool of people they're picking the teams from will be smaller in Tokyo, and after that, it's a disaster.
So you're basically, you're like a doctor that has one person he saves, but 25 people were killed, and you just talk about the one you saved.
Well, that's what's happening, Kevin. But overall, the Australian public look at the result of the Australian team in Rio, and they said, we've had a disaster. But if it was bad in Rio, it's going to be worse in Tokyo. It's not going to get better. It can't get better. The pool of people you're picking from is smaller, and statistically, if you do that, you're limiting your chances to win medals.
And are there people knocking your door down to give you money from the corporate world to fund you? I mean, Letitia Scanlon presents beautifully, speaks really well, has all those things going for her. Are people knocking her door down to help sponsor
her? Kevin, the shooting team's on a budget of $2.5 million a year, okay? $1.1 million of that is eaten up in salaries for administration. You could do about $1.1 million. And that's at the lower end, because that's not associated with the costs associated with those salaries. That's just salaries.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of it's
what
just eaten up.
Here?
Yeah, well, because all of these administrators are on $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. But if the money was spent wisely, Letitia would still get a salary. I don't think anyone has a problem with Letitia Scanlon or James Willard or these guys that are doing very well of getting something out of the sport, but you've got to cast a broad net to get the other people involved. You've got to give everyone a chance to think they can make the team.
Yeah.
But no matter what policy we put in place, people like Letitia Scanlon will still make the team. Yeah. That's my argument. They're good enough, they'll make the team.
Yep.
If they're not good enough, they'll train harder and come back next year. But you've got to remember, Swimming Australia have one Olympic race to make the Olympic team. They have one race. If you don't make the team on that race, you don't go to the Olympics. And they still get their best team every year because these athletes train themselves up so hard to be so good for that race at the Olympic trials. They win the race and then they know they're right for the Rio Olympics or whatever the Olympics is coming up. And the true and fairy tales.
And for someone else, Russ, but not smiling, for I'm me. Smiling. It must be the old blokes club listening to Monkees.
Is it 70s today? Is it? I've heard the Sweet. I've heard the Monkees.
Our music selection.
It's 60s, isn't it?
Monkees was 60s, yes. Yeah. Our music selection man has got very eclectic taste. Now, off the SMS, it sounds like Russell should be snapped up as a radio presenter. There's Greg in South Caulfield. Good on you, Russell, for telling the truth. Too many snouts in the trough in both sports and politics. Well, I'm not going to get any arguments for anybody there.
No, not today.
Kev, please tell Russ not to get paranoid about his son playing soccer. Embrace the game, Russ, says Pete in Cheltenham.
And, I will, Pete.
We are embracing it, both of us. Our sons are playing it, but we're embracing it. Now, our final one going into the break, and Russ is with us after the news. Is Russell, the three-time Olympian, going into the jungle in Celebrity Get Me Out of Here?
Boy, that rumour's going around a lot at the
but
moment.
But it's factually incorrect.
No, three-time, no.
You're a six-time Olympian.
Yeah, get it right, whoever that anonymous person
is. Is there a six-time Olympian going in the jungle? I don't think so. Are you going in twice?
No.
Russell Mark, the Olympic gold medalist, is in the studio with me. The Australian team has two debutantes for the one-day international tomorrow. Maxwell returns, Khawaja misses out. Chris Lynn and Billy Stanlake will make their one-day international debuts. We were hoping to have Chris Lynn on the program later on, but unfortunately they pulled the pin on that this morning. So we saw him last night on the Big Bash, if you're watching that. But he won't be appearing on the program this afternoon. Cricket Australia decided, we'll let him concentrate on his one-day international debut tomorrow, which is fair enough. Don't have a problem with that. Another big hour on the way this hour with Russell Mark in the studio. Happy to take your calls, 9429 1116, or your text thoughts on 0433 98 1116. Why have you gone off social media? You've completely... Because that is a big thing to do these days for someone like you who was... I won't say overactive. You weren't Rowan Connolly, but you were in there.
I think it does consume you a little bit. I went up to a wedding. God, I hope my wife's not listening to this.
She will be.
No, she's somewhere
Hello,
in the city at the moment. I went up to a wedding up at Port Douglas, and we had a great night, great wedding it went to. Got back to the room, 12 o'clock. We had a beautiful villa up there. It had an little outdoor spa in it and everything, but sat down just to quickly flick through my laptop to see what was going on Facebook. Lauren said, I'll meet you in bed. About 45 minutes later, she popped back out wearing nearly nothing, says, what the hell are you doing? I was getting involved in a discussion about Donald Trump maybe winning the election in the US with somebody on Facebook. And that's led to a very heated argument.
You have got serious issues.
So the next morning I woke up after I patched things up and decided, this is not for me.
So have you missed it?
This is probably
And I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
3 months ago, I guess this was. So that morning I deleted my Facebook account. I deleted my Snapchat, my Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, you had the whole gamut going.
Yeah, I did. But
so I just have Twitter and here and I have Facebook at home.
Look, I haven't, Kev. I've become a bit of a recluse. I think people would be surprised to hear me on the radio today because I think people think I've died. But look, I think it just was consuming too much of my time.
Yeah.
And you'd get involved in discussions that I really didn't need to be discussing Donald Trump at midnight.
No, that's fair enough. I can imagine that.
So look, with the footy season coming back up again, we've come up and started. We don't have to get back on it, you'd think, but I haven't missed it.
Do you feel out of touch?
Look, the social media I like because it let me keep in touch with friends from around the world that I normally wouldn't keep in touch with because now I'm not competing and travelling. I don't get to see these guys and how their families are growing up. So I've missed that part of it. But where do you stop? I mean, you're right. I added Snapchat. I added Instagram. You know, why? And then
my next question.
Why? So I've thought about entering an anonymous Facebook name and just going on stalking everybody, like 90% of people on Facebook.
I was going to say, that would make you different to everybody. How?
But I haven't. I haven't done that yet.
Did you get trolled? Did you get abused?
Yeah, look, Lauren cops a lot more of that than I do. But, during the Olympics, when I was commentating, there are a lot of people that don't like what you say and they post things that you don't like to read. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm just a commentator. Get off my case. But then when you read what they're saying about some of my friends in the team that don't do so well, you can't help but take that personally and defend them. And then all of a sudden you've got 6 or 7 bushfires going around you. You're trying to put them all out at the same time. And you just run out of time. And that was purely the only reason in the end. It just consumed too much.
I've got a follow-up question, but we'll go to Stephen Ballarat. Hello, Steve.
Oh, g'day, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just caught the end of what Russell was saying prior to the news about the winning edge policy. And I've got a question. It's a little bit in two parts. But if the winning edge team are where they select our representatives, what happens to grassroots sport? And what happens if somebody decides to, you know, let's say Letitia gives up and does want to be a policewoman or a supermodel or something? Where is that next wave of shooters coming from if they know they can't make a squad? Do they get disheartened and leave the sport?
I guess that is the problem right there with Winning Edge, because if you're not in that squad, you're on the outer. And that's what happened largely to young Mitchell Isles at the Rio Olympics. When Michael Diamond was taken out of the team, there was no reserve. So they had to put a young guy in who probably wasn't ready for the Olympic Games at 16 or 17 years of age. So there was no contingency plan. And I guess that's the problem as I see it. There's no clear pathway, as Steve has correctly identified. What was the other part of your question, Steve?
Yeah, well, that basically is what happens. I mean, if they haven't learnt from the Michael Diamond, Mitch Isles experience, who are the next up-and-comers that we should be looking to for the future?
And that's it.
Well, and the part that I'd like to ask on that, Steve, and thank you very much for your call, $100 voucher from creatorwall.net.au for your, it's wall art for your home or office or your man cave, Steve, so take that. What talent identification do Winning Edge do?
Well, it's left up to the governing body to do that. Winning Edge,
whether it's basketball,
correct? They're saying Basketball Australia should do it, or in our case, the Australian Clay Target Association should do it. But if these people are nominated to go to the next level and they're not put in the squad, they leave the sport. They just leave, and that's the problem with Winning Edge, and that is also the problem that John Coates has with it. Is that you've got to look at the future.
I don't mind the concept of putting money into an athlete, say the Letitia or whoever you want to talk about. No, I don't have a problem with that. What my problem is, shouldn't you just let it go through the normal process of Jimmy Bloggs comes out of Roval, Billy Smith comes out of Werribee, so they all go to the state championships. They go from the state championships to the national championships. They win the national championships, they're going to go to they're the best three in the country, so they're going to go to the Olympic Games. Give them the money
at that point. Exactly right. Kevin, stop talking sense. I mean, seriously, you can't. Sorry. It's so obvious. Look, in our sport, it's very clear cut. You either hit the target or you miss it. So ours,
there's no seven score or judging.
Correct. But if you've got a gymnastic sport or something like that, you've got to be subjective about it. You've got to pick a football team subjectively. So you rely on the coach and the selectors. You put the right people in place to pick the team. But our sport should be self-selecting. And I agree with what you just said. Once they've gone through the state, the national championships, if they make the team, throw buckets of money at them.
Because you don't really need a lot of money to be state and to get to the nationals, really.
You don't.
You probably manage that.
The money is getting to New Delhi and Cyprus and Moscow. That's where the money should be.
Going to a World Cup and all those sorts of things that you need to do to become competitive in your sport.
Correct.
Destiny Iaiva is trailing Wang Chung 3-5 at Kooyong. That is, I believe, how you say that Chinese player's name, Wang Chung. I heard Peter Johnston from Kooyong say that. So I'm not channeling band names from the 80s. That is, in fact, I'm told how you say that person's name. Now, Bob off the SMS says, well done, I deleted Facebook 2 years ago, will never go back, too much crap and time wasters on it. Good point, Bob. Now, my second part of my question about the whole social media thing, you have children. you have teenage children and soon to become teenage children. What is your rules and regulations on social media for your kids?
Well, my 18-year-old just several years ago just blocked me ever adding her as a friend, so she refused to ever let me find out what she was doing, so she worked out pretty quickly how to block me. Yeah, look, I won't be able to stop the 11-year-old turns 12 this year. I don't know what age is the suitable age. It's probably 12 if you could trust them, but I'd want someone to be looking over to be able to access their account. But what age do you take that away? What age do you say, no, you're free to do what you like? I don't know. It's a tough one.
It's very tricky, that.
I haven't got the answer. But I do agree with Bob. There's a lot of crap and time wasters on Facebook.
Absolutely. It is 17 minutes past one. We'll get a tennis update later on in this hour, hopefully with Paul Aitken, who I think is down at the Australian qualifying. That's the other part where we've got tennis on at the moment, is down at Melbourne Park. Have you, you obviously like the tennis.
I love it. Yeah. I do.
Do you really love it?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy going to the tennis. Okay. It's one of the few sports, I think, that it's... I love golf, as I said, but I think golf's such a better sport to watch on TV than to go. But tennis, you really have to go to appreciate how hard these people are working and how hard they're hitting the ball. Yeah. And I do like going to the Australian Open. It's one of the great sporting events that we've ever had.
Now, you've travelled the world. That tennis precinct, and it's done it up again.
Wow.
It's, actually, I can't believe I read and heard yesterday people complaining about the fact that the old entrance is now no longer the entrance. You have to go around. There's a new entrance.
Oh, but, is that right?
Yeah,
I didn't even know
that. They've done the entrance up. I haven't seen it, but people are complaining about the fact that they've done the entrance up.
It's world class. The facility we've got, that whole area with the Olympic precinct, the MCG, the stadiums we've got, it's marvellous. You can't... Eddie keeps putting up we need another stadium.
Yes, he does.
But I don't know. I mean, do we need another stadium in that area? I don't know where it is.
Don't we need another stadium? We might need to have a lick and a promise on a few couple that are there.
Yeah, I mean, my only criticism of it is when you have a few venues going at the same time, getting a park in there
well,
is ridiculous.
Well, tomorrow night, and I didn't bring the print in, I've got it for tomorrow, there's no parking for the Melbourne Victory game, and you're going tomorrow night. There's no parking in the precinct of the actual park. There is parking at the MCG, but there's none in the precinct because of the tennis.
I'm glad I've spoken to you today about that.
Yeah. So anyone who's going tomorrow, if you can't park in the actual precinct around... Amy Park, you know, all those car parks that are around there. There's no parking in there. They're all taken up with the tennis, but you can park at the MCG.
But the Australian
Open... The good thing is we've got really good public transport.
Oh, absolutely, and it's getting better to that. But the Australian Open tennis is truly the premier sporting event in Australia. You know, the AFL Grand Final's a great event, but worldwide, we're under the spotlight for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The Formula One Grand Prix...
It's only 4 days.
Yeah, and it's...
One afternoon, really, and only break that down, it's only 2 hours.
And unless you are a diehard Formula One spectator and a fan, I don't know if it carries the same amount. It gets
the
a
Melbourne
lot of coverage.
Cup's becoming global, but it's only 3 minutes.
Yeah. Do you think people in Los Angeles worry about who wins the Melbourne Cup?
No.
No, I don't. But I think they all know who wins the Australian Open tennis.
Yes, I do.
You know, the Boxing Day test, well, this year, well, I would have said it was an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's losing...
The international audience for the BBL is increasing, but there is no doubt. You're right.
Yeah, I think it's got to be classed as our premier event. And they do such a good job of it. Oh. And the fact the players all say the same thing, it's so many of them think it's still the event to go to. It's the wrong timing for a lot of players.
Oh, it's absolutely wrong for all the overseas players. They finish too late now because the big money events have been pushed back into November, December. And this is literally, what are we talking about? It starts on Monday. We're 3 weeks away, out from Christmas.
But they're all here.
Yeah,
they're all here. Now, 20, 25 years ago, the Australian Open was, well, maybe 30 years ago, the Australian Open was struggling a little bit.
And they didn't like it. Tennis Centre, the National Tennis Centre opened on yesterday, back in 1988.
Wow, hasn't that gone quick? But being at Kooyong on grass, a lot of people just didn't like it because they have to spend so much time getting used to grass. The time of year it was on, it just didn't work.
Yep.
So they've done a great job. You've got to take your hat off. Forget where the entrance is, Kev. You're still going to get in the ground.
It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. Andy's in Windermere. G'day, Andy.
Hey, Kev, Ross, how are we doing?
Good.
That's good. 2 points, real quick. First one, go to victory, Russ. Jump on board, mate. You'll enjoy it tomorrow. get amongst it. Second thing, about the social media thing. My niece, she's 10, going on about 25. And she was just this year allowed to get Instagram and not do Facebook, not do Snapchat, but Instagram, purely because it's probably the most simple form of social media where all you can do is just post a quick picture of where you are, what you're doing. And I reckon the only exception you could do is just make sure you can get access to it so that if he or she posts something that you don't reckon's right, you can just delete it and that's it. There's nothing really else to it. There's no private messaging or anything like that. So I don't know. It's probably the most simple thing and it gives them a step into the social media world.
Isn't Snapchat like that, though? Isn't Snapchat supposed to be safe because you just look at it once and maybe it's gone?
Well, that's changed now because you can hold down the snap that you've watched once and you can replay it and then you can screenshot it as well. So that's therefore it can get, so if you send anything that's incriminating, they can screenshot it and then just post it.
Yeah, we'll just get Dane Swan and Travis Cloak on the line to get
and Jake
that,
Carlisle.
Confirm that, Andy, if you wouldn't mind hanging on a tick there. Yeah, look, just when you think you've got something that is totally disposable, bangs,
there's someone,
comes
smarter.
Up with an app. Seven past one here at 11:16 SEN. Of course, we mentioned tennis. Time for a summer of tennis update for Jets Fitness, the 24/7 gym where you can work out on your own terms with low fees and no lock-in contracts. Head to jets.com.au. We're heading to Paul Aitken, who's become our resident musical aficionado here of picking the band that sings the song that we do as the play-on. Your time starts now, Paul. Who sang that last song? Oh. It's Magic.
Yeah, good afternoon, Russell, Kev. You've got me there, boys. I all I remember about that song is it was in Happy Gilmore when he won at the end of the movie.
Oh, was it? I don't remember that. But it was Pilot, wasn't it? Yeah, Pilot.
I wish I could.
Yeah. Remember Pilot had that that other massive song called January.
January.
Well, that was the other. That was the one after January.
Look, slightly before my time, I reckon, fellas. But I'd like a bit of Dead and Alive next time.
Well, that's around. Countdown stuff, isn't it? January Pilot.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Molly would have loved that.
Rage is celebrating its 40th anniversary and playing all countdown old countdown episodes. I'm only watching it to see if I pop up at any stage. Paul, give us an update on what's going on with the tennis. How's Destiny going?
Destiny was 5-2 down to Kui Wang from China in the Kuyong Classic. Possibly struggling from the weight of expectation of what's been happening in the last couple of weeks, because she has come onto the scene in a big way. She had a very heavy week last week, playing 4 or 5 matches last week and qualifying and making the quarters on a brilliant run there in Brisbane. But if we look today, really, it's all about the women's qualifying at the Australian Open. And we've had a couple of good news stories, or one in particular. 21-year-old Ellen Perez, who's 634 in the world, she's defeated the Slovakian player Tadeja Majerec. And she's done that in 3 sets. And she has Ellen has graduated from the University of Georgia. So she's been a college player, essentially, but she's a Wollongong girl. So that's fantastic for her. And at the moment, Olivia Rogowska, a local Melbourne girl who's 275 in the world, she's playing a girl from the Netherlands, Cindy Berger, who's 138, and they're a set all. So, there's also been a couple of misfires, if you like. Storm Sanders went out 2-6, 1-6, and... Tammy Patterson, local girl from Melbourne. She lost in straight sets as well.
Paul, how many games do they have to win to actually qualify for the Australian Open in this tournament?
Yeah, Russell, they have to win 3 matches. So the men started yesterday because their draw is slightly bigger with 128 and the girls is 96 and they started today.
So is that 128 actually come down to one person gets the entry?
No, 8 will get through.
8. Okay.
Yeah.
And that guarantees them...
$40,000?
$40,000,
oh,
is it?
Roughly? Yeah, it's huge.
Wow.
It's $50,000.
$50,000?
Yeah, that's right. And so most of these players, There's quite a few that have been in grandstands, and some are young players coming up, and some are older players that we all know going out. So
a first round loser at the Australian Open gets $50,000.
Correct.
I'm in the wrong sport. I was in the wrong sport, wasn't I? $50,000 to lose at the Australian Open.
He just said before how much he loves tennis. Now he's spitting chips. Hey, Paul,
it's a lot of similarities to your sport, Russ.
Paul, on that, so how many are in the men's draw? So if you're a first round loser and you go out in the first round, you're what, 100?
Yeah, 128. So 64 players will go away in the first round with $50,000. But, you know, honestly, guys, like in tennis, like only if you've got to be ranked around 140 to actually make money. So it's a very, very difficult sport, and there could be up to, I don't know, like a couple of thousand at least playing all around the world full time making nothing. So
yeah, we know
it's
that.
It's very much a pyramid.
Yep.
So
very much so. And all the endorsement money and all those lurks and perks and all those things that go with it go to the top of the pyramid, not to the bottom.
Yeah, and so when I see some of these people that, you know, are ranked in the lowly hundreds that no one, probably none of the listeners will even know about, and they take away $50,000, I couldn't be happier for them, because that'll be, you know, spent up in expenses, and before you know it, it just gives them a bit of a shot in the arm, really, to keep going.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, Paul, and one that I know you and BP make a lot on this radio station, and rightly so, too. Thanks for your time, Paul. We'll catch you with another song from the 70s or 80s to tantalise you with later on.
All right. Good on you guys.
Paul Aitken there with a Summer of Tennis update for EnviroWall, cost-effective insulation for summer cool. You'll need a little summer cool today when it gets 26, and a bit of winter warmth. You might need that next week for your home. Head to envirowall.com.au.
SEN Summer of Tennis for Werribee Kia. Grand Slam deals on now. WerribeeKia.com.au. And California Sports Services. World-class services for schools, homes or clubs.
28-2. Now, a little news from the cricket. The Brisbane Heat have been fined $1,000 per player for a slow over rate in last night's game against the Perth Scorchers. McCullum has been suspended for the Heat's next game. That is ridiculous. Fine them by all means. And I heard...
Suspended.
That's ridiculous. Why would you...
Who's marketing this?
Well, I'm not sure, but that's a cricket decision, obviously not based on thing. The fine will be reduced to $500 per player should the Brisbane Heat accept the penalty without appeal. The Heat were found to be 6 minutes behind the scheduled time to complete their 20 overs after allowances, which equated to being one over short. In accordance with the BBL playing conditions, the Heat players each received a fine, and captain Brendan McCullum also received one strike. As this is McCullum's second strike for the season, under the BBL's playing conditions, he will face a suspension for the next BBL match he is available for selection in. The Brisbane Heat have 14 days from the match to advise if they are exercising their right to appeal, and until a successful appeal, the penalty stands.
So they're blaming the captain for the slow over.
Yeah, well,
rate.
That does. So someone cops offense. It. I mean, in cricket, the captain cops that, and we saw, I think, the South African skipper suspended. We had Steve Smith with it hanging over his head. But can I just say, you know who the biggest penalty that is for? Whoever the Heat are playing next, and I haven't got the schedule up in front of me. The people who pay money to go and see Brendan McCullum bat. And that's what the BBL's all about. You've lost Chris Lynn to national selection. A fit and healthy Chris Lynn was standing there talking last night when he probably should have been playing, because he's not playing again until Friday in the one-day international side. But don't
penalising the spectators.
The public.
And the television public as
Channel
well.
Channel 10 would be filthy.
Yeah, I'd have to have a think about that. I know that someone has to
take
responsibility. Yeah, that would be the obvious answer.
He's getting a poultice to be out here to play BBL. Fine him, and fine him properly. Fine him $10,000.
He's going to go out in the town tomorrow night now or whatever and think, well, this isn't really a penalty at all.
And
crazy.
And the fine goes down to $500 per player.
If they accept it.
They're playing the Stars at the MCG on Tuesday. So he'll be out of the Stars game at the... So Brendan McCullum and Chris Lynn will not be playing
at the
MCG. What a joke that makes it. Already you've got Warner, Stark, Smith and all those blokes not playing in the BBL at all. The BBL is a very important competition, much loved by the cricket-going public. it's doing enormous things for the game, growing at levels with, you know, kids are going along there and then they're going to the BBL T20.
Yeah. Look, the advertising people at Channel 10 would be thinking, we're trying to sell a heap of advertising for this game. Well, the bigger stars are now not in it. Everybody loses there.
But the thing is, that they're doing a great service for cricket because they're bringing people to the game who wouldn't normally go to the game. Just walk around, 40,000 people. Go to the next Victorian versus Queensland Sheffield Shield match.
I'd love to know what our listeners think about
that.
Yeah,
I would too.
9429 1116
or 0433 98 1116. Brendan McCullum suspended because of the slow overrate of the Brisbane Heat. Dwayne on the road. G'day, Dwayne.
Hey, mate. How are you?
Good, thanks.
What do you think, Dwayne?
Oh, absolutely ridiculous. I think they're playing the Stars next Tuesday, and I was going to attend the MCG, but that's it. I'm boycotting. I'm out of there.
Yeah. You won't be alone. Yeah, I'll bet Dwayne is not on his own there, because he'd be a huge draw card, McCullum.
And
The Channel 10 head of sport would be headless at the moment to hear that. They'll need to review that.
Dwayne, what you can do is you can come into town. You don't go to the cricket on Tuesday because you obviously, but you can sit in your Le Garage car park and listen to SEN because you've got that for free at 114 Flinders Street. So the next time you do come into town, you've got some free car parking. Enjoy that. Thanks, Dwayne. 9429 1116 is the number. Let us know what you... I can't read the one that's on the top of our SMS thing because I don't think you can do that to the BBL. I think that's not good. 14 days to appeal. Season will be over. Play on. They lost 10 minutes for an on-the-field concussion test. Okay, they did lose some time for a concussion test. So, yeah, all those. But that's, I think that that's covered by the thing that they say here, allowance after allowances, which equated to being one over short. So they did have allowances in there for their time to complete. I must admit, I have noticed the last couple of games have finished late. Have finished sort of.
I understand time is of the essence. It's a package they're selling. But golf tournaments are the same. They time them to perfection now. So it's all about advertising. Let's face it.
Steve in Ormond. G'day, Steve.
Hey, gents. How are you?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Look, I hate to be a party pooper, but they all know the damn rules when they sign on. If he hasn't adhered to the rules, you know what? Do you make rules for some and rules for others just because he's a draw card?
But there are so many unseen circumstances in a game of cricket. There's just so many different things that can eat into the time. I don't know. I think you're penalising the wrong people. Kevin's right. You should hit him in the back pocket. That hurts so much more than taking a day off the game and having all these people that would go and love to watch McCullum play, but now they're not going to. So they're like Dwayne. They're not going to turn up.
Yep. Now, good on you, Steve. Appreciate your point of view. Not a problem. Every other team plays by the rules. Just because McCullum is a big name, you make an allowance. You're kidding, Kev, says Steve in Wanney South. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not making an exception. I just think you're robbing the public. The kids and I have tickets. I want a refund, says Ian in Viewbank. There's going to be some of that going on.
Sure.
Andrew's in Reservoir. G'day, Andrew.
Boys, I don't think Channel 10 will be that wrapped about it either because it's going to affect their product, and plus they'll probably pay the fine on behalf of him anyway, and it should have been more of a fine, as you said.
Yeah, the advertising department there will be the losers here. They've got a job to sell advertising, and people watch for stars. They look at the great players, and look, hitting them in the back pocket, that's the answer. Just, you know, that hurts more than anything.
Oh, it would mean that he would be hurrying everybody up. And I know we've spoken to some of the players here, and they've talked about the fact that they know the clock's on. Ben Hilfenhaus yesterday talked about, as a bowler, he knows the clock's on, and they know they've got to get. And you see them rushing. Oh,
they run back. Run back.
They're not purposely, you know, stopping and tying up their shoelaces and doing all those things. Or the ridiculous thing I saw in a soccer game on the weekend, which I did ask
a
few.
Yeah, I saw the same incident.
30-something seconds to go, when Nick Ansell comes off the bench to come on, and I asked Carlos Alberto Diego, I said, why did they do that?
He said, to eat the time
up on the clock. And I said, well, that is just ridiculous. It's insulting, to be perfectly honest. Simon's in Fairfield. G'day, Simon.
G'day, fellas. Look, I reckon it's pretty simple, isn't it? That you've got to address it at the time, and if they've only bowled 19 overs, the other team's batted, got their score up, I mean, you just sit there and you say, okay, you've got to do in 19 overs what the others did in 20.
Yeah.
That'd hurt them, sure.
That'd smarten them up. Yeah, let's throw the rules out the window for a player because he's popular. No, we're not saying that. Thanks, Simon. Good call. Shane's in Kerr Lewis. Hi, Shane.
G'day, G'day, guys. Yeah, just a little bit of a different perspective. I was at the Renegade Stars game on Saturday night with 2 8-year-olds. Now, we're down the Geelong region, so we caught regional transport in. They have special trains. Now, the game ran late again on Saturday, and we missed that train. So I had 2 8-year-olds on the grassy Southern Cross Station platform waiting for a later train. We got home at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I've got no issues at all. Suspend them if they're going to run the game late.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fair enough. That's a valid point of view, Shane. You don't want to be having that happen to you. Can they make the train timetable a little more flexible? If it's a special train for people going back to Geelong who are leaving the game, would have thought you could maybe get the train to stay there for another 5 minutes. Paul's in Morwell. Hi, Paul.
How you going?
Good, thanks.
Good, good. A few years ago when Morning was tapping the Stars, he had one strike next to him, and for one game, they actually made James Faulkner the captain, so he wasn't suspended.
I always find a way around
the
rules.
Yeah, that's a good. I didn't know that. That's pretty smart.
I always find a way around the rules.
Well, that's a good call.
Well, it should be a team sanction then. Whoever's the captain, if you transgress, he gets the
hit him in the back pocket, Kev. Yeah. You're on the money. Yeah, you're on the money. Some like it hot and some sweat when the heat is on.
SEN. If you're playing at home, that is the Power Station. A lot of people say it's Robert Palmer. It is Robert Palmer, but not as Robert Palmer. A lot of people say Duran Duran. It is Duran.
What movie
Duran.
Was that out of? That was in a movie, that song.
Sounds like a Bond song, doesn't it? I'm not sure.
It's in something. Someone will know.
It probably finished up in like a Cappy Gilmore or Austin Powers or something. The SMS is going off. The only job I wouldn't want to have this afternoon is a receptionist or phone operator at Channel 10 because it'll go off at Channel 10 with the news that Brendan McCullum has been suspended for the next game. There is the ability to appeal. We'll find out from the Brisbane Heat if they are going to appeal.
But if they don't appeal, they get half the fine that they were issued. Is that what you're saying?
If they agree, each player's been fined $1,000. If they agree to that penalty, they will only be fined $500. It'll be half. Now, I don't know whether that includes agreeing to the penalty, includes agreeing to Brendan McCullum missing the next game. Alex is in Melton. Hi, Alex.
Good afternoon, Kevin and Russell. How are you going?
Good, Alex.
You're talking about time wasting in the soccer, but it was done in the test last week, the second test, when the Pakistani captain, just before lunch, stood aside, took his helmet off, shook off his wet hair, came back to the crease, checked his checked centre again, and then asked how many balls and that. So it happened.
He actually jumped on Facebook and checked his Facebook account too while he was at it, didn't he? No. So your point, Alex?
Well, it happens all over the world, time wasting. So there's no rule saying you can't do it in the test frame. So, and the soccer is the same thing. You're just using it to their advantage.
I guess in 2020, Alex, it is such a time-orientated event. They've just got to get it exactly right. Yep. And that's the difference between that and test cricket, obviously.
Yeah. He was just playing so as they get lunch without having to face another over. That's been going on since Adam was a boy in cricket. Chris is in Ashwood. G'day, Chris.
Good afternoon, boys. I just had an interesting stat after watching one of the big Bash games the other night. I noticed a few players that were playing who had played for Australia. So I went through the lists. And there's actually 65 players that have played for Australia in the Big Bash, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, good stat. Interesting
stats,
stat.
Man. That's a good one. 55.
Now, on this, we've the SMS machine. Thank you very much for your call, Chris. 94291116 is the number. And the SMS, 0433981116. One mark of leadership is to be able to adjust to circumstances and make decisions accordingly. Draconian responses like this one, a fine is not a sign of good leadership. And as for all the lemmings calling in and saying, yeah, fine them because they broke the rules, well, what's the old saying about cliffs and lemmings, says Mark from Sydney. Thank you, Mark. It's a farce that the games have been pushed back half an hour due to the project.
Is that a fact? They've pushed them back because of the project.
They're certainly finishing later. I hadn't even thought about that, whether that's right or not. But the project is back on. I'm not sure I think the starting time now is 7:30 or 7:50.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I think the time has been changed, I think. And they're also off the SMS saying there's bigger gaps in the between innings as well. I have noticed in this last week that they have been having a feature interview in the innings break, which I don't remember them having before. Usually it was just the host and usually like an Andrew Simons, whoever's the guest, and one of the other hosts, one of the former players. But now they've been having feature interviews. They had Huey Bowman on the other night, and they had Will Davidson on last night that I saw. So that might be interesting. The game actually finished 10 minutes under the schedule, says someone else. And on the parking situation, I mentioned about tomorrow night there being no parking around the precinct for the city game, for the victory game. Parking is simple for Amy. You park 5 minutes away, walk over the railway bridge. Most of the time, city games don't even have that. We have to dodge the parking inspectors in Richmond, East Melbourne or South Yarra, says Tim and Berwick. Yeah, good on you, Tim.
Hey, and more importantly, Some Like It Hot was in European Vacation.
Oh, is it European Vacation? Yeah, there you go. I knew it would be one of those films. Not like it sounds like a Bond song, but probably wasn't in a Bond film. It's on during Rusty Griswold's dream sequence on the plane. Is that right, Samson and Mooney Ponds? You clearly have... You've got to find something better to do with your time. In regard to Test cricket, they're supposed to bowl 90 overs in a day, and little happens if they don't. Well, that's a very good point. They start earlier the next day in Test cricket if they don't get the overs in, which is a bit ridiculous.
Can I ask you a question about something my 10-year-old son brought up about the 2020 cricket?
You can.
He asked me the other day.
I reserve the right not to be able to
answer. Well, he said... Who's Hurricane? Who are the Stars? Who's Renegade? Because the media don't refer to them as the Melbourne Stars or Hobart Hurricanes. Why do we do that? Okay. Why do we do that in the media?
We do on this radio station, and in the ads that they run on this radio station and the promotion that we do, we always refer to the Melbourne Renegades and the Melbourne Stars. When it's the national one on the television, it's just the Stars and the Renegades and the Hurricanes, because it's not a denominational event. It's basically we're becoming like the Americans, Lakers.
My son wants to support the Melbourne teams, but parts of the media don't refer to them.
Majority don't.
Is it a marketing ploy?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So they don't care that my son would barrack for the Hurricanes because he liked the uniform of the Hurricanes, but because they're from Hobart, he said, I'm not going to support them.
Yeah, but he might pick them for the colours and not worry about that stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's what he was trying to do.
And if you sat down last night and you had a passing interest in cricket and it was the Heat and the Scorchers, okay, it's the Heat and the Scorchers. Oh, yeah, okay, it's Brendan McCullum and it's, Ty and Agar and Klinger and all those. You go, yeah, okay, I'll watch that. But if someone billed it as Brisbane versus Perth with the footy, if it's Fremantle playing the Gold Coast, where's your interest meter? Is it at 100 or has it gone down?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Indian League now, I think you brought up before, that's just the Royals. Yeah. It's not from wherever they were.
It's not the Cardassian Royals or the
exactly.
Whatever.
But it is an American thing, isn't it? Because the NFL have had so many teams that have been changed from city to city. Yeah. So now if you're a Dodgers supporter, maybe even the baseball or whatever.
Brooklyn. They used to be Brooklyn,
and
now LA.
And so, but you still support the Dodgers. That's what they're trying to say.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I guess the marketing people are trying
and
to get in here.
And given also that the amount of players from different states who are playing in the Brisbane team, there's probably 3 Victorians there, there's probably 4 Melbourne blokes in the Perth team, there's probably 4 Perth blokes in the Melbourne team, it's not really a parochial competition. So that's probably
so you're saying this works, the fact that they don't.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does, actually.
Because rugby union did that originally in the Super League, didn't they? They did.
But
the same
when
thing.
You're marketing it in the city of origin, it becomes come and see your Melbourne Stars tonight.
Come and see the derby, for sure.
Exactly. I'm on my way from misery to happiness to be. I'm on my way. Coming up to 2 o'clock, the Proclaimers. It is nearly 2 o'clock, nearly time to go, Russell. Stop the Americanization of Australian sport.
Well, we weren't doing that.
No,
we weren't.
There's nothing more Australian than Heat and Scorchers and Stars and Renegades. Bush Rangers, our Shield team's called the Bush Rangers. That's not Americanization of our sport.
No, not by a long way. But, I was just curious how young people relate to this.
Yeah, I think it'll finish up working. I think it'll be, and as they expand, and they will, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It'll just
happen. Yeah, they've done a good job. They got 75,000 there the other night. What a great result.
Will Brendan McCullum play? We're trying to find out. We're trying to work out if the Heat can wait till Wednesday to say, yeah, we'll appeal, and that means he gets to play on Tuesday night at the MCG against the Stars.
The boss of Channel 10, and I have a say in this.
You reckon he's on the phone?
Absolutely.
Now, don't appeal till Wednesday. We need him Tuesday night. Pivotal night in the ratings. Hey, Russ, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kev. It's been great.
Been fun. Looking good. Behave yourself.
Thanks, mate.